It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola, with Dan Berger, my co-host. Today featuring Teresa Heredia from Gary Farrell Wines, one of the most iconic wineries in the Russian River Valley, I would say. And Dan will have a lot more to say about that. Welcome back, Teresa.
Thank you very much.
Good
Thanks
to see
for
you.
Having me.
It is great to have Teresa back with us. Hey, I knew you were coming in. That's Barry Herbst, the wine buyer from Bottle Barn, back with us. Okay, Gary Farrell Wines. Dan, amazing stuff they've been doing for years.
Well, since the beginning, and that's, 82 was it?
Yeah.
That was the first vintage. The real issue for Russian River Valley is that it's a blessed area for so many different varieties. You can make almost anything there. But when Gary got into the business in the early 80s, he was trying to do something a little bit different, trying to pick a little bit earlier because the trend at that moment had been to pick a little bit later and get a richer style of wine. And his idea was to capture some of the regional characteristics that you don't get in every single region. And so in this case, after Gary retired and some other things transpired, Teresa was brought on board to kind of capture the same design that Gary was looking for in making a great winery. He had already established so many different points of interest and had developed his winery. He put together himself, had all the right equipment. So Teresa had a long, extensive career making some Pinot Noirs for Joseph Phelps' property out in that same region. It's not easy to grow grapes in a cold climate and still make great wine from them. And Teresa has captured everything and more. And I was talking to Gary Farrell on the phone a few weeks ago, and he was very, very complimentary of what Teresa was doing. And this project has gotten better and better and better. It's a real tribute that somebody whose name is on a label actually likes what took place after he left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not yeah. easy to do.
That's not easy to do. Before we get into, Teresa, your background in all this, in the wine world and winemaking, give our listeners a sense of who Gary Farrell is and what he has done, because his name's iconic. I know
his
that.
His name is iconic. So Gary Farrell is a pioneer of the Russian River Valley, one of the most important pioneers of the Russian River Valley. He's been making wines for a long time. He made wines over at Davis Bynum with a lot of other winemakers at the time.
Yeah.
And he was once the winemaker for Rocchioli, and his first ever wine under his own label was the 1982 Rocchioli Pinot Noir. Rocchioli or Rocchioli Allen, I can't remember. But he's been making beautiful, sight-expressive wines for, you know, for a very, very long time. And his label is iconic, and people recognize it, and they equate it with quality of Russian River Valley in Sonoma County.
How old is he now?
Oh, God.
He won't mind you today.
He's not really that old. He's probably... I would say 60.
What?
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
He's younger than me.
I'm sorry, Nate.
He start when he was 12?
He actually started at Davis Bynum when he had just graduated from Sonoma State.
Wow.
So he was just in fact, he was pretty much a cellar worker and a painter. He painted.
So he retired in his 50s?
I suppose so.
I would imagine, yeah, because
Jeez.
The interesting story here is that wineries really wanted Gary's sort of, if you call it magic, people would tell me, well, what does he do? What does he do? And I said, well, number one thing is they're picking early. And he said, oh, no, well, we can't pick early. We can't sell the wine then. Well, I don't know what else transpired, but Teresa's doing pretty much exactly what Gary wanted to do if it was a perfect world for him. And he had made some fairly amazing wines. His last couple of vintages were under the Elysian label, and I still have a few bottles of that. Mm-hmm. But once he left the business completely, nobody's asking the question anymore, how does he do it? Well, tell us how he did it, and how are you doing it, Teresa?
Well, I think we have the same idea in mind. So I think Gary's philosophy was to try and have the vineyard shine through in the bottle. That was the most important thing. Not wanting to mask it with oak or ripeness or alcohol or anything else. Just really purchase the best fruit and make the best wines from the best vineyards in Sonoma County. So that's essentially what I'm doing. It's what I was trying to do at Joseph Phelps Freestone Vineyards, and it's what I'm trying to do here at Gary Farrell. So I'm picking earlier. Early doesn't mean I'm picking underripe. It means that I'm picking when the fruit tastes ready. When it's not underripe, when it's not overripe, it's a fine balance. And in doing so, I'm getting wines that are generally under 14% alcohol, so the alc is not masking the characteristics of the vineyard.
Amen.
And I'm using light toast to try and sort of wrap the fruit in a nice, you know, semi-toasty umbrella, but without masking all of the purity of fruit that we're looking for.
Teresa, give us your bio, how you got into the wine business and became a winemaker and everything. And
yeah, I kind of stumbled upon it. I actually spent a few years in chemistry at UC Davis, but prior to that, I was a biochem major as an undergrad at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. Came to UC Davis to work on my PhD in chemistry, wow, wanting to be a professor at the university level.
Wow.
But I stumbled upon wine at UC Davis. I met some people in the wine program. We were all teaching assistants, and we got together to grade exams. We exchanged stories. We tasted wine together, and I was sold. You know, as soon as I heard that their research and their background studies were the same as mine, I was like, well, what am I doing? So I switched, and that's how I ended up in wine. Got hired at Sainsbury, did my first harvest, and then got hired on at Joseph Phelps immediately thereafter and spent 10 years as the winemaker there for Freestone Vineyards, Freestone and Fog Dog.
And then, that was the most amazing turnaround in a certain way, because it's an area of the world where you have to have some sort of either great intuition or have great vision to be able to understand what cold climate fruit is all about. It's not the same as normal harvesting of warm climate fruit. It used to be that the Napa Valley had quite a bit of Chardonnay in it. It was all moving to the south. It was all going to the Carneros. And when Teresa moved over, the risky factor was, how do you take Freestone area fruit and turn it into a Chardonnay fruit and turn it into a decent Chardonnay? And the trick was the ability to capture both the quality of the fruit and to keep the oak low enough within the context of the lower alcohols. All these pieces fit together like a perfect puzzle, because when you taste that wine, you don't see pieces. You see a synthesis, and that's the most important
thing. Weren't those early years really difficult to get the grapes ripe? I mean, wasn't it like 1 in 3 years where you'd get enough ripeness there because of the planting and the way it was laid out originally?
Yes, absolutely.
You had to make a lot of changes, right?
Absolutely. And it wasn't only the beginning. It was 2010 and 11 that were extremely challenging as well. The cooler years. People told those who were planting out in the Sonoma Coast, Kistler and Joseph Phelps, the West Sonoma Coast people, they told them they were crazy for planting grapes out there. And, you know, even the Russian River Valley at one time, I think people told them they were nuts for planting so close to the ocean.
Really?
But I have to say that some of the coastal fruit that I worked with at Freestone and also just here at Gary Farrell, some of the best grapes that I've ever worked with. So it was an honor to work with them, and now it's an honor to be working with the vineyards that we get at Gary Farrell.
What was your first vintage with Farrell?
With Gary Farrell, 2012. Wow. With Joseph Phelps, it was 2002.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sure
2001 at Sainsbury.
Great. Yeah, let's talk about this show. Really? This is a 2016, Teresa?
2016 Russian River Selection Chardonnay. It's a blend of about 13 different vineyards, so you're getting some killer stuff from all over Sonoma County, mostly Russian River. Rocchioli, Olivet Lane. We put a little bit of Durell in there. I mentioned that one because it's from Sonoma Valley, but we have that wine here today to taste later. Bacigalupi, you name it. You're getting all the good stuff. Richie, stuff that should not go in an Appalachian blend wine, but we're making something that Gary Farrell started. Gary Farrell, the man, started this, and the philosophy was always to make this blend first. It's the most important. We pick the components for the Russian River Selection first before everything else, and then we set aside some other components that are going to become single vineyard selections.
So it's really a premium effort to make a blended wine. And what I like about this particular bottling is that it shows a little bit more of the maturity character, even though there's no maturity in it. It's so young. It's so fresh.
How long would Dan lay it down, Berger
lay
it down?
Well, I would say, for me, 6 to 7, 8 years. But I don't think anybody else is going to appreciate it at that age. I would say most people will benefit from 2 more years. And if you go 4, you'll be rewarded, but you have to have really pretty good storage conditions. You don't want to leave it in a room at 70 degrees. That's not going to work.
Would you decant? Is this a part of the decanting thing?
I would definitely decant this wine if I were drinking it now, because there's such an incredible vibrancy to it. And all you want to do is bring up more of the subtleties, which are hard to pick up in this young a wine. Oh, look, we just opened the bottle, 20 minutes ago? Nothing, no air to it at all.
And it pours out just a touch reductive, which is a good thing for from a winemaker's perspective. You want reduction as opposed to oxidation. You want it to be nice and crisp and fresh.
The reduction gives it a retarding character.
Mm-hmm. So why it needs
to decant. But it's not going to oxidize by the time you... If you had this in a decanter, it's not going to oxidize for an hour.
What it will do is open up really nicely.
Yeah.
A 2016 Russian River Valley Chardonnay, Gary Farrell.
Retailing for about $35 a bottle.
Yeah, and considering what I've seen around the world... A wine like this around the world, if this style were carried through for other regions of the world, you'd pay $50 to $75 for a bottle like this.
Sure.
And in California, there are very few people who want to spend $35 for a bottle of Chardonnay until they taste it. Then they say, wait a minute. I paid $80 for this in France, and it wasn't as good.
And let's just say that the price of grapes going into this wine make absolutely no sense whatsoever. It's pretty ridiculous. So that's what makes it so delicious.
It's got to be Barry
Herbst. Bottle Barn and Gary Farrell.
Yeah, we've got everything they'll sell us, basically. I think a lot of the single vineyard small production stays at the winery, but I think at least three different Chardonnays and three different Pinots, I think, last time I looked from them.
All right. And that,
thanks, Barry.
Teresa, you brought a second Chard?
I did, yeah.
What year is this?
So this is 2015 vintage Durrell Vineyard, Sonoma Valley. And this is one of my favorite wines stylistically, and I love the vineyard as well. So we'll see what you all think.
How do you like our Lazy Susan that the Sonoma County wine growers made for us? Yeah. Pretty cool.
I was going to say back on the Russian River blend, that's got to be kind of challenging. That many different vineyard sources are like cooking where you get so many ingredients and the dish can just go flat. You have different flavors fighting each other. So there must be some selection. You must have to taste it constantly as you go so you don't lose the overall picture, I would imagine.
It takes us a long time to put the blend together. It takes about 3 weeks to compose the Russian River Selection blends, both the Pinot and the Chardonnay. Yeah. And mostly because we have so many individual components, not only vineyards, but blocks within vineyards and clones, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, much harder than just a single vineyard where you keep it or don't keep it.
The single vineyards are really just kind of picking out the component that's the soloist versus the components that are part of the orchestra. Right. We like that musical reference.
Yeah.
People seem to get that. Nice to see you, Barry.
Yes, good to see you.
Kathy, Teresa just poured me that one that you are looking
the
at.
The Durrell, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm ready.
This vineyard's been around a long time, famous in the early days, I think, by Kissler, right? In the late 70s,
yeah. Kissler really appreciated this. When you're putting a wine through a malolactic...
Geek alert on Kissler.
When it goes through a second fermentation to drop the malic acid into a softer acidity, you run the risk of losing some fruit. Durrell seems to withstand it better than almost any other because...
What is Kissler?
Kissler, one of the first allocated, hard-to-get wines.
Really, really
days.
Iconic brand that's very hard to find. And
pretty much sells only under the mailing list.
Yeah, and they're very, very rich wines. But Durrell always gave them a substantive base of fruit so that you didn't have to worry about losing fruit character after it went through that second fermentation.
This is
just astounding wine.
It really is amazing. It's luscious. It's beautiful. Give me your thoughts there, Danny.
Well,
does anyone call you Danny?
My mother.
Your mother.
She gets away with it.
That's the first time I've ever called you Danny, and I think I'll stop.
The secret to this wine, I think, is the acidity. Because when you have that kind of a substructure that holds the wine together at the base, then it allows for a lot of these subtle characteristics to stay in the mouth a little teeny bit longer. And the end result is you're picking up nuances that weren't there maybe 6 months ago. I think when I tasted this with you, it was probably a year ago. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that wine was great then, but it's even better now.
It's even better now,
I'm saying
sure.
Dan will lay this one down at least a decade.
This at least 10
minimum
years.
For this one. Over under is a decade.
Oh, seriously, because the fruit...
Are we going to be around in 10 years, for God's sake?
I've got a lot of optimism in myself.
Yeah, okay, good. Good. I'll be optimistic with you. Wow, this really is special. Talk about...
Yeah,
you know, making this.
So this wine, it's first of all, Durrell is one of my favorite vineyards to work with. It's planted to old Wente Chardonnay, and they're tiny clusters, tiny berries, so you have a lower juice-to-skin ratio, so just naturally more concentration and structure. And I like to pick it on the earlier side of the spectrum because I want to capture all of what Dan was just talking about, all of the essence of the place. The riper you pick it, the less essence you have to
express. There's more citrus in this. The first wine, the 16... was a little had a little bit of that squash component, which is part of the Central Coast aromatics. It's very interesting, and it lends itself toward aging because it opens up faster. In this case, you have more of the citrus. Here is almost
lots
a little grapefruity component.
Yeah.
And this is
yeah.
just fabulous because it's the part of the equation that is occasionally lost during the process. If you try to make this wine and you're not careful, you could lose that citrusy
for
component.
Sure.
This is just fabulous.
And this is 100% malolactic fermented in about 35% new French oak. Right.
And you don't taste the oak.
No. And most importantly,
no, it's
12.7% alcohol, which
that's
is
crazy.
Almost unheard of in Sonoma County.
Wow.
A lot of producers are doing
that's
it in
low.
The West Sonoma Coast, you know, the quote-unquote true coast.
Yeah.
But you don't see it much in the Sonoma Valley and Russian River Valley. But this vineyard just wants to express itself, and I think that picking it at low sugar helps it to express itself better.
I think that one of the secrets to great wine is moderate alcohol, or moderate everything for that matter. But Chardonnay tends to be a kind of a me-too wine. I hate to use that phrase, but that's what it is. So if somebody gets a gold medal for a wine that has some residual sugar, and the next thing you know is for the next 10 years, everybody's making wine with sugar in it. So these wines are absolutely dry, and the reason that they're so appealing is that the first thing you think of when you take a sip of it like this is, what am I going to eat with it? Mm-hmm. It's food wine. It's not to walk around with. How can you drink this wine without anything in your other hand? You've got to have some finger food or some, you know, salmon or
something. Or a beer. I don't know.
It's hard to believe, it's from Sonoma Valley.
Oh, Thai food, yes.
Yeah, always with Thai.
Well, you guys go to seafood. No, what is it?
Seatai Bistro.
Seatai Bistro every Wednesday after the show. So.
So this must be a serious microclimate. I would guess this to be Sonoma Coast and one of the coolest appellations if it was served blind to me. But the Sonoma Valley, it's growing side by side with Cabernet and Merlot. And
yeah, but there's a secret to that. If you take a look at a U.S. Geological Survey map, you'll notice that there is a little piece of Bennett Valley that butts up against where the wind comes through a gap. So Bennett Valley temperature is more akin to Durrell temperature. So it's a similarity there. And Bennett Valley's cool. Mm-hmm. And Durrell is therefore cool.
It's cool because I've lived there for 20 years.
It's cool.
You tell us all
I make it cool in the kingdom of Steve, as the city council calls it. It's California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofala. Dan Berger, my co-host, and Teresa Heredia from Gary Farrell Wines is here, and Barry Herbst, the wine buyer from Bottle Barn. It's brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofala. And don't forget, every episode of California Wine Country is available as a podcast wherever great podcasts are offered. You can also go to calwinecountry.com.
And you can subscribe.
Thank you, Dan. For over 60 years, Della Tofala has been making equipment for the wine, beer, and beverage industries worldwide, but they're based in Santa Rosa. Everything from crushers to conveyors and pumps to presses, filters, fillers, and complete packaging solutions. Their award-winning technologies mean that they make it easy, especially in the wine industry, but for everyone in the beer and beverage industries. But you can get your grapes from vineyard to bottle very easy. And they offer high-quality equipment, experienced technicians. If you need to find out more information, go to DellaTofala.us. All right, we're tasting Gary Farrell wines. You've moved to Reds.
I have an interesting story to tell. It has nothing to do with California. It has to do with Domaine de la Romani Conti, which makes arguably the best, well, I mean, you could say one of the best Burgundies in all the world. It's in Burgundy, and it's 100% Pinot Noir, and they make five reds. They're all very, very expensive wines. In fact, they're so expensive that you almost never see them on a shelf.
So how expensive are we talking when we get them?
The red wines are many hundreds of dollars. I haven't seen the prices recently, but they're hundreds of dollars.
$5,200 for a Latoche right now.
Yeah, Latoche. $5,200.
For one bottle.
For one bottle.
I have two
and
bottles.
And when
the
we've,
store,
done, the, we've done the commercial tastings.
Right. We'll take two.
Yeah. We've done the commercial tastings, and they're really interesting wines. And, you know, when they're old and have been properly stored, they are absolutely sublime. When you talk to the people at Domaine de la Romani Conti, they ask, they mention the fact that the best wine that they make is Le Montrachet, and that is a white wine made 100% from Chardonnay, and it sells for more than all the reds. They only make 200 cases a year, and it's pretty much pre-sold. And it's Barry, what's the price on a bottle of the current release of
Le Montrachet? Give me that one, but I think it's over 6,000.
Yeah, it's around that level. So it's
save one for me. Mike, write him a check.
You're having a good year.
Here's the story that is part of the lore. They always serve their Le Montrachet after all the reds have been served.
They do. It's true. I did it there in the cellar, in the barrel room.
That's cool.
And the reason is that they say that a Chardonnay that's that good is really red wine with no color. Mm-hmm. And they say that Pinot Noir, therefore, is a white wine with color.
Really?
Well, that's what they say. Here you go. Here's your example right in the glass.
Okay, but you were talking during the break about the shards from Gary Farrell.
Yeah, well, that's easy enough to...
Instead of 5,000...
Jump off there, yeah. If you were to get a bottle of a good Meursault from Burgundy today, it would cost you at least $130, $150 a bottle for a decent producer's name. This wine is how much, this Chardonnay, this Durell?
The Durell is $65. The Russian River Selection is $35.
Also, $35 for a wine that you wouldn't be able to replace in France for less than probably about $80. Mm-hmm. So, and a good quality Meursault would cost you close to $100, even at the discount stores. And that wine is $65 here. So really what these wineries here are doing, California leads the world in this, bargain wines at the highest levels of quality.
Sonoma County in particular.
Absolutely. You won't see these wines in the East Coast because our buyers out here know it and they get them.
And yeah. Barry, do you have some of those super expensive wines?
Oh, yeah. The Romani Conti?
Yeah.
I've got Latoche is $5,200 and then another wine from them, Romani St. Vivant, I think is $3,800.
Oh, bargain.
Yeah, and the actual Romani Conti is often $10,000 and up. Depending on the
who buys this stuff?
Does it super wealthy? Yeah, it's usually more of a trophy situation.
Do they drink? They don't drink them, huh?
Not often.
It sounds like what Johnny Depp was drinking before he went broke.
Yeah, very possible.
Which is one of the reasons he went broke.
Exactly.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Crazy. Wow. Okay. Again, talk about this.
Okay. So this is that example of Pinot Noir. You look at it. It's red. And it's actually darker than I would expect. But when you taste it, you say, wait a minute. This is like a phenomenal quality white wine with all this intensity of flavor. If you serve this to somebody in a black glass and didn't tell them what the color was, they'd be hard-pressed to be able to identify this as a red wine because
really?
The tannins are so silky. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The wine is so soft. It's got great acidity. It's all the hallmarks of a great white wine.
What year is this, Therese?
2016 again.
Okay, and tell us how you made this wine.
So, again, my philosophy is to pick on the earlier end of the spectrum, but this particular Pinot Noir, it's the Russian River Selection, so it's our Appalachian wine, and it's composed of about 18 to 20 different vineyards. Again, you're getting Rocchioli, Bacigalupi, Hallberg out there in Green Valley, which is in the Russian River Valley. We even throw a little Gap's Crown, which is outside the Russian River Valley, but you're getting all the who's who, the big names, the high quality. Again, the price point doesn't really match the quality of the grapes that are going into the wine, but it's what it's what we've always done. It's what Gary Farrell Winery is all about, and the Russian River Chardonnay and Pinot are what we're all about. So winemaking-wise, acid is incredibly important. Dan, you were going to ask a question.
Yeah, what's the acid?
Good question.
Again, I always say I knew that in college. It was all about the acid. Never mind. I've been saying that for years. I got to shut up.
I love that. About 3.45, roughly.
So this is really crisp. The potential for this wine in the bottle is really terrific because when you've got a pH that's low as 3.45, you're dealing with a wine that's really tight and really rigid. It hasn't opened up yet. In a certain way, this is like another example of the youth of the wine that the Chardonnay was. In this particular case, you've got an opportunity that's guaranteed with almost an insurance policy is your pH, because the wine does have the acidity, but it's not tart on the finish as much as it is balanced. The balance is what makes it so you can drink it now with food, and for $35 or
$45.
For $45, this is absolutely ridiculous quality for that low a price. In most cases, a wine of this caliber would be at least $60. So we're now talking about a $15 sort of winery-only discount, except that that's on the shelf.
Yeah. And Barry, you carry this?
Yes. Oh, it's a big seller for us.
I can imagine.
I was going to say, I'm on the aging commentary, we just bought a cellar recently that had quite a bit of older Pinot Noir in it from a lot of cool climate producers like Flowers, Fela, from wines from 98, 99, 2000, 01, 02. And I'm getting constant positive reports from customers, and I brought home a few bottles. Blew me away. And these are 20, 22-year-old wines, and they're holding their own. So I'm definitely a believer in – I'm coming over to Dan's side on the ageability of Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm. So very impressive. And this is a wine I could see easily 10, 15 years, no problem.
Absolutely.
That kind of acid.
I wish I had that much time. I kid. I'm a kidder. I mean.
This is a fabulous experience for a lot of reasons. But first of all, those people who recognized the original quality that Gary was showing back in the early days when he was doing his very first wines, some of those wines didn't have quite the longevity because of other factors. It had nothing to do with the fruit, had nothing to do with the winemaking. It were things like poor quality bottling lines or poor quality bottles or poor quality corks and things like that. And Gary really suffered in the early years with people who didn't provide the proper equipment. As the time went by...
Well, he should have gotten a hold of Della Tofola.
There we go. Okay. Well, they weren't here then.
Oh, they weren't. No. Okay.
But in sometime around 1990, Gary started to hit his stride. And what's really in these glasses right now is really a real tribute to what the brand is all about. And Teresa's done just a fabulous job to keep everything on par. You could easily make more of some of these wines, but I know that your production is based upon the quality that you have.
Absolutely.
And you're not going to put an extra barrel in just to have volume.
No, no. We'll bulk it out. If it doesn't fit quality-wise, we'll sell it on the bulk market.
Interesting. It's GaryFarrellWinery.com, a beautiful place. Teresa, tell everyone where exactly you are and talk about the tasting room and it's gorgeous.
The graphics are beautiful.
So we are
great
located.
Website.
Yeah. Check out the website, www.GaryFarrellWinery.com. It's really beautiful. Come see the updated tasting room. It's a little over a year now that it's been updated. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. Last time you were in was the first time I saw the photos.
Oh, yeah. Of the new tasting room.
Of the new tasting room.
Mm-hmm, it's
stunning. My God. That's cool.
I didn't understand really why they wanted to do it until I saw the completed project, and I was like, okay, now I get it.
What's really appealing about this project is that I think Gary, who is a very shy individual, and chose to locate a property in a way that is away from all the other wineries off of West Dry Creek Road. So basically, if you're crossing the Waller Bridge, instead of turning right to where all the wineries are, you turn left.
There are only two.
Yeah, there's only two. There's
Motion and Gary Farrell.
Yeah. And then you have to drive up a driveway that's almost a mile long.
It is. I don't recommend riding your bicycle up unless you're really, really fit.
When you finally get to the top, it's pretty spectacular.
It is. We're technically, our address is in Healdsburg, but we're on your way to Forestville or Guerneville, depending on which road you're taking. So on West Side Road, come see us. Come check it out. We poured a second Pinot Noir now. This is our 2015 McDonald Mountain Pinot Noir.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. Is that in...
It's a new-ish vineyard. We purchased the grapes from Emeritus, and it's out near, off of Hessel Road, heading out toward Cotati. So it's in the Sebastopol Hills, sandwiched right in between the Petaluma Wind Gap. You were talking about the wind earlier when you were talking about the Chardonnay. Sandwiched between the Wind Gap and Green Valley. So it's very foggy. It's very windy. The yields are really low, so you get really amazing concentration. But there's this acidity in this wine that's unlike any other vineyard I've ever worked with. I've never had to add a drop of acid to it ever. Speaking of dropping acids.
Really distinguished.
Good one.
So the other thing about this wine that's really special is the spice component. I don't get this spice component or the exotic fruit that you taste in this wine. I don't get it in any of our other wines. So it's pretty stunning.
I think the secret to the spice here is that it's not a normal spice component. First of all, you smell some raspberries because that's what the fruit component leads to, or maybe a little bit of like baby strawberries, those little teeny baby strawberries.
I get that. Yeah.
And that's a really interesting characteristic of the wine. There's a very, very faint trace of almost cranberry in the aftertaste, too, because you're starting to associate both the flavor along with the tartness of cranberry. So
and maybe the tannin that you get from cranberry.
So this is a little more substantial wine, but it would not still be considered heavy. But the spice components are really fascinating because one of those spice components seems like it might be related somehow to curry. But the wine doesn't have a curry flavor at all. Mm-hmm. It's just something that you think of when you're thinking of Indian food. Mm-hmm. There is a kind of an association there. I don't know why I'm thinking that way because there's no particular Indian food flavor here. It's just it's something I'm getting gives me that dry. It's a dried spice rather than some sort of a green spice like tarragon or basil would not work in this context. It's a dry spice.
Mm. Lamb?
Yeah. If you were to dry rub lamb and put it on the barbecue, you might approach this.
Oh.
But the difference is that you want to keep the garlic away from the food because that's too strong for this. This wine is fairly delicate.
I'm sorry, I can't do that. I'm Italian.
This wine works with lamb. I've done it, and it works beautifully with lamb.
Right on. I bet it does. It seems like it to me. Yeah.
Could probably pick that out of a blind tasting 10 times out of 10. Just that slight.
It's a pretty site-specific wine.
This Pinot is at Bottle Barn?
I don't think we get this one.
No.
That's a winery-only deal. Mm-hmm. I'll beg and plead next time I'm there, though.
Yeah, well, he does a lot of business in the hallway after the show. He may be able to convince you guys.
This one's winery direct. We'll talk Barry. But 65 suggested retail.
We'd like you guys to sell some, too. We don't sell it all.
Right. We make too many wines.
Exactly.
This is the kind of wine. This is the kind of wine, absolutely, that will benefit from some age. We have had, in fact, we still have some mid 1980s Gary Farrell Pinot Noirs in our cellar, and last time we opened one was in '86, and it was really in good shape. The oxidation was clear, but the wine had such fruit that it was still alive. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't recommend people wait, 22 years for a bottle of Pinot Noir, but in this case, it was one of those that just got bypassed for some reason, and we opened it up anyway.
I have to, speaking of aging really quickly, when I was in Italy last May, a friend of mine who is a sommelier who worked at Gary Farrell had an 88 Gary Farrell Pinot. He poured it for me blind, and I couldn't have guessed that it was a Gary Farrell wine, nor
really?
Could I guess that it was a California 88. I guessed that it was Pinot from Europe.
No
so
kidding.
So it was pretty incredible.
Well, it's fun to
30 years old.
We our cellar is pretty extensive, and most of it is a single bottle of this and a single bottle of that. When we open up something that is really unexpected, I would say 90% of the time we're surprised at how good the wine is, and 10% of the time we're disappointed. I think that's a decent track record for all the experimentation that I've done.
Hell yeah.
Are you often depressed you don't have a second bottle after you open the sample?
Occasionally not.
Depends on the wine.
We still have four bottles of 93 Gastaldi, which I will tell you about. Anybody interested in drinking tannin, pure tannin, get 93 Gastaldi. I'm still waiting. I think it's got about 40 more years before it'll open up.
Italian wine?
It's the ultimate
Italian wine.
40
more years.
I'm hoping that I will enjoy it someday.
Well, Dan Berger turns 180 today, and congratulations, and open that damn wine, will you?
I look pretty good for that. Yeah. It's all that tannin.
Must be the wine.
Wow. As far as the tasting room, do you need reservations, or what's the deal with that deal?
We are currently by appointment only, so yes, a reservation helps. We do take same-day appointments if necessary.
Go to GaryFarrellWinery.com, folks, and just check out the photos and everything else they're doing, and join the club and get some amazing, amazing wines.
And when the weather turns good, you can sit outside and enjoy the incredible view.
I just want to check out those couches.
I know.
How often do you have to get people off of there at the end of the day?
Oh, people will sit there for a long time.
Exactly.
It's summertime.
I'm going to go out there, have some wine, and take a nap on one of those couches.
Now's a good time, Barry.
That's beautiful.
Exactly. Those sunny January, February days.
Yeah.
Nice.
I got it.
Okay, so what's coming up with Gary Farrell Wines? Events, anything to talk about? Or
nothing in particular right now, events-wise. I'm just going to get started here in January doing lots of sales and marketing travel, so I'll be traveling around the U.S. doing events.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a great gig. It doesn't suck.
It doesn't suck. Mm.
A few good meals involved, I'd imagine.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the few wineries that doesn't do a lot of extraneous wine. You're not messing around with Albarino or anything like that.
They stay within themselves, what they're good at.
We do make a Zinfandel. That's about as crazy as we get. But Gary's done that for a long time.
Yeah. I think a lot of people who are resident in this county forget that there are some iconic wines here that are not terribly expensive, and that you have to basically go to the winery to get it. And that's one of the reasons why we're happy to have Therese on the show with us, because this is a winery. From Santa Rosa, you can be here in 20 minutes.
Absolutely.
Now, is this something you
brought?
Not,
I brought a secret wine.
Okay,
talk
about
this.
It's a
wine we're
doing. Siduri, who I'm familiar with.
Yeah, this is a bit more of a lush style Pinot than what
mush?
Therese, lush, kind of forward.
I thought you said mush.
Yeah, he was talking about me.
Goes great with mush. good breakfast wine.
Yeah, mush wine. This is one we're doing a flash sale on right now. It's a label that they're no longer doing, Sonoma County bottling of Siduri, and we got it at 33% off the regular wholesale. And you can only get it online, and probably for just the next 2 days.
Really?
It was selling for $30 originally. We're selling it for $19.99
for the
next 48 hours.
Talk about the new thing there at the Bottle Barn, because this is very cool. And it's taken you guys a long time to put everything together because you did it slow and right.
Right.
Explain what it is.
So this is an example of every week or two or three, we're going to come up with a great deal that goes out as a flash sale that we have a decent-sized quantity of.
Yeah.
That people, you know, generally have to respond to quickly or it sells out. Aside from that, we'll have a cold-out portion of our store, maybe 40 or 50 items you can buy online. Any six bottles, including on these flash sales, are free shipping anywhere in the country, ground service, all-inclusive.
You built a whole new area there at
Bottle
Barn.
We rented a space,
that.
Two driveways over from us. We keep separate inventory. We have a whole separate program for the online store. There'll be some wines that'll be in both places, but this one we're tasting right now is only online and only as a flash sale, so just limited time.
By the way, that's one of the coolest watches I've ever seen.
Thank you.
Where'd you get that?
I actually bought it online out of the country on eBay. It's a Hamilton Ventura. It's
that
a replica of an old Hamilton. No, it's not horrible. Mm-hmm.
Really?
That is it only keeps time in the country. In which
where you purchased
it. But it was like Moldavia or something like that. But it was a good deal and it worked out. So.
Barry, you were late to work today. Well, I'm not in Moldavia.
Yeah, wrong time.
I'm fine.
Exactly.
Quickly, Don.
I'm okay. I'm aged.
Don Berger, tell me about this Siduri.
Hey, the Siduri is really nice wine. It's gorgeous fruit.
Adam
Lee is the winemaker. He's actually his wife's a winemaker as well. I think the most important thing about this is it says Sonoma County on the front label, and it really does have that Sonoma County character. It's got the lightness and the elegance, but it also has just enough oak so you know that it's there. Now, for $20, you'll never find a wine like this. Because
this
nobody,
is delicious.
Well, it's really delicious wine. He's a really good winemaker. And how he makes wines from far-flung regions is hard to imagine. People have always found that it's difficult to get fruit from Oregon to get down and make the wine here. He does a good job with his wines from Oregon.
And this is the first year after the winery was sold, so he didn't have to worry about employees and bookkeeping and all that. He just focused on winemaking.
This is 2014, which was a pretty good vintage, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Teresa, your thoughts on this?
Siduri? This is an amazing wine for $20. So if you want it, I would say go get it.
California Wine Country with Dan Berger and Barry Herbst, the wine buyer at a Bottle Barn. Teresa Heredia from Gary Farrell Wines, the winemaker there. You do great work, my dear.
Thank you. You nailed my name four times in a row.
I know. I'm proud of myself. I can barely say. I called him Don.
Don.
Berger.
Don
whatever.
Donnie Danny.
I've been called worse things.
Yeah, I'm sure. So have I.
Quick thing?
Yeah, go.
And I got to get Teresa on the program for this, but we have in-store tastings now every day in December leading up to Christmas. So we have a Type 86 license that allows us to do educational
nice
tastings. So maybe you or someone from your team could come at some point,
I'd love
too.
To. One or two
we got
of us.
Wineries and whiskeys and all kinds of different things. So
all right. And we'll Dan, we'll see you next week. We're going to see you next week, Ben?
Next week we have Alan Baker from
Senior moment.
All right, whatever. Alan, the phone Alan, I told Alan today, so you could be on the show today. He said, no, next week. Thank you very much for straightening me out.
Yeah, I saw your email, so we'll check it out. Okay. But, okay. Teresa, thank you so much. Pleasure to see you again.
Honored to be here. Thanks, guys.
And don't guys, be a stranger. Yes. Keep us posted on everything that's going on at Gary Farrell. It's GaryFarrellWinery.com. Good night, everybody.